Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my Wild Country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
The latest rage for kids is driving entire neighborhoods crazy. It's called
Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
That's like an alarm clock.
With Dusty Hera.
Well, you want to woo-woo.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
It's that woo-woo.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080.
They think it's a fad. It's going to go away. It's not going away. It's driving me nuts.
The Fan.
All right, hour number three starts with a follow-up to our previous segment. Follow-up research has found that other doctors in this study, we were talking about the, what was the name of that animal called? The colutus animal. They said that what happens if they don't go after the 14 hours is that they've evolved to the point where the males release a bunch of testosterone naturally in their bodies to gear up for that 14-hour run until their heart explodes, that they produce so much testosterone, if they stop them before they go and their heart explodes, then they create ulcers and just bleed out internally. So if those are your two options, you bleed out internally, or...
Option one.
You go with the heart
going, with
heart
option
going
one.
After 14 hours.
Going with option one.
You're going,
down.
You're going... Wait, the ulcer?
No, option one is the
14
finish.
Hours,
14
right?
14 hours.
All right. So now we're on to that, and the colutus still remains on the top of my new favorite animal list. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk some NFL, shall we? One of the things that Aaron Rodgers has been testy about is his lack of ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage. And Matt LaFleur is a guy that calls two in the huddle, and you run those two in the huddle. It appears that Aaron Rodgers has won his battle with LaFleur.
Cram it up your cram hole, LaFleur.
We've given him, all the freedom. So if he sees something and he's got the green light to do whatever he needs to do to get us into a good play, we're not going to take that from him.
Stick it in your ear, LaFleur.
Relax.
Aaron Rodgers now has the freedom to do whatever the heck he wants at the line of scrimmage.
I think that was always going to be the case here. It just got to the point where you had to understand the new kind of scheme that he's going to be running. And Matt LaFleur is going to bring a different style of offense. And so once you get comfortable with it and the calls are a little bit different and everything is there, it's really terminology. I mean, everything football is, here's the term that everybody loves to say. Football is football.
How you
draw it up and what keywords you want to use. People love in football to have their own vernacular. Vernacular is so important from having those special kind of keywords and buzzwords and all those things. When it comes down to it, if Aaron Rodgers wants to change the play, the guy's a superstar quarterback. He'll change the damn play.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out there. Run whatever the heck you want to run, my man.
Right. I mean, an offensive coordinator calls a play. Head coach calls a play. You get lined up in there. You got eight guys here. You're seeing some of a coverage and you're rotating down. Are you going to take it out of Aaron Rodgers' hands? Say, yeah, still play. Run it there.
Yeah.
Obviously.
No, you're not going to neuter one of the best quarterbacks in football. And we all kind of knew
that
this was
going
to happen. Yeah. Yeah. And what's going to be fascinating for me is to see how long their relationship lasts on good terms, because it does seem like Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, they do get along. They seem like they're on good terms. But when that soured between he and Mike McCarthy, the offense tanked in Green Bay. It's like they weren't on the same page.
Yeah, but they won a Super Bowl together. I mean, they were together for quite some time.
I know, but that's when they won and things were humming and they got along. Aaron Rodgers and that offense were completely different. At the end, the last couple of years, it was like you could tell they didn't like each other. And publicly, they had spats with one another, offense showed.
I think that's an Aaron Rodgers thing, too.
That's why I say it'll be interesting to see how long this little honeymoon will last for them.
They're definitely newlyweds, this crew together. And you're going to see if Aaron Rodgers has a sense of urgency now Because what is he? He's turning 35 this year.
Yeah.
I think he would have a sense of urgency.
One would hope that he would. Mm-hmm. This is was brought up earlier in the show. We were talking about Cowboys and Ezekiel Elliott. They are close, apparently, to terms on a brand new deal. He is reportedly on a plane to Dallas.
Oh, boy.
We're flight tracking.
We're already flight tracking.
We're going to flight track. He's out of Cabo and on his way. Apparently, we're just on the details of the contract, not terms. How much money he's actually going to be paid. Mm-hmm. It's
offset language.
Verbiage, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're going with a little offsetage.
Oh, yeah. When your percentages are coming to you.
When your actual guaranteed money will be paid out. Will it be paid out prior?
But what I think is fascinating is even you see people that we consider smart football people to be tweeting out and on social media and stuff, on TV, giving their takes of Ezekiel Elliott better sign now or there's not going to be enough money to go around. With Lyle Collins signing his five-year extension to tack onto this last year of it, where he'll be one of the highest-paid right tackles in the NFL, correct me if I'm wrong here, but that has no bearing on Ezekiel Elliott or Dak Prescott in the deals that they potentially could have.
No, I don't think so either, especially with the cap at $193 million. And you're looking at it from Jerry Jones' perspective, he's going to pay everybody now, and he's going to pay them very quickly.
Because the cap's going to grow.
Well, it's going to grow, too, but he's not any younger. Well,
and he has money earmarked for certain positions. Like, the thing that I find amazing in these smart people are like, oh, hey, you got to hurry.
It's running back.
Got to hurry. No, you don't, because the fact of the matter is that Jerry Jones isn't just willy-nilly throwing out these deals, and the Dallas Cowboys, they've got money allotted for each position and how much money they're willing to spend on each position. Right tackle and running back aren't the same position. Quarterback isn't the same position. I think it's interesting that, you know, this will not affect how much money Zeke or Dak or Amari Cooper make, because what it will affect is the guys at their position.
It'll affect it a little bit. You're not getting, if Dak Prescott is asking for $40 million, yes, that's going to affect your cap.
But they weren't going to pay that anyways.
We don't know.
Because they didn't have that. Well, we do know that because they said $40 million, no thank you.
Yeah, at some point in time, we'll have to figure that number. We won't see it when it's signed. But if you're looking at Amari Cooper, what is his going rate as a quality wide receiver, a very talented wide receiver? Running backs, just with the amount of money that you're paying a running back, it's not a huge, huge number. It's 14 to 15 average, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. It's more about the guaranteed money, but how you structure that is what they're trying to do, properly structure it so it doesn't take up all the cap space. But that's not an exorbitant amount. I mean, it's not like running backs are soaking up 40 or 35 like a quarterback.
No, it's not.
Or a pass rusher trying to want 22.
Well, and that's the whole point, is you have an allotment, like smart franchises. When you see teams say, okay, we're going to let this guy walk, it's because the money that they're asking is far and above the allotment that they believe they can build a championship roster with.
Or your organization is just cheap and they don't want to pay it.
Well, there's that too.
LA Chargers.
Miami Dolphins.
They don't want to do it. And they're cheap, and they say, well, we have all this cap space. You know what happens when you have all that cap space, where all that money goes? It goes into this poof world. It's like, poof. That money is allotted for players. But if you don't pay it, it's not like the organization goes, oh, we'll just pocket this. It doesn't work that way. You just have chosen not to pay those guys because you're selfish.
Wait, what do you mean? So, what do you mean that money doesn't go back to the organization?
So there's $190 million in a payroll.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, like the NBA has a salary floor.
Yes.
And the NFL has a salary floor, and there's certain amounts. So you can say cap space. Every year, that percentage of cap carries over to the next, whichever you don't use. There's a percentage of it.
Right.
So you can go over the cap the following year if you just underpay, kind of like what the Cleveland Browns are able to do.
Yeah, it's kind of working out for them.
Yeah, but it's not like that money is just, it doesn't look like Brewster's Millions, where you walk into a bank vault and that money is just sitting there. It's just sitting there where you can access it and go spend it on your trip to Cabo, your free plane. That money is specifically earmarked for players and player salaries only. So when you don't spend it, what does that tell you about your organization?
Well, you're not trying to win right now.
Of course not. You're preparing for a future or maybe a draft pick or maybe a free agent. You're not actually paying your current players and you don't want to use that. Or, which is my favorite one, is you don't want to establish a precedent that you are a team that wants to pay. You want to be known as a team that Yikes. We want guys that want to be here.
Hard bargain negotiators.
Correct.
Wow.
And that other, and that last
piece is, how
many
teams like that are still in existence right now, do you think?
Teams that don't have wealthy owners, like super wealthy. That's why you're looking at the Oakland Raiders, because all that money that you have to allot and pay, you have to have an escrow. Mm-hmm. You have to have that actual cash to be able to say, we're paying that. So you don't have that money. It's not like that $190 million sitting in your bank every single year. So when you pay a head coach $10 million, that's fine. You don't have to have that sitting in escrow. Mm-hmm. But when you pay your big-time guys and you pay Antonio Brown and he has $68 million, guess where that $68 million has to go?
The $68 million guaranteed has to be in the bank and ready and sitting there. All of the guaranteed money that you hear has to be in an account that does not move.
And the NFL will not loan you money against that.
No.
You can't go to Roger Goodell and go, hey, Rog, can you send us an extra $100 million so we can put that in the bank so we can pay this payroll?
Do you think if they did that more teams would spend?
I think some of the owners, like the Brown family in Cincinnati and some of these other owners that are looking at it, the Bidwells and some of those that don't have the deep pocket cash. That's why Jerry Jones is like, what? I'm worth $5.2 billion. You want me to put that in escrow? You want it tomorrow in quarters? What do you want it? Where do you want me to put it? There's mm-hmm. no problems.
Yeah. But that, do you think that it would? So you're saying it would help?
Yeah, I think it would help free agency
league,
a little bit.
Why doesn't the league do that?
Because
then?
When you show favoritism to those teams like that, then those other owners are going to go, I'm a billionaire for a reason. Give me my loan too. Because wealthy people use other people's money to make more money.
Yeah, I know.
That's how it works.
But wouldn't that ultimately mm-hmm. be better for the business overall?
I think so.
I mean, can't they see that would be better for the business? They're like,
well, let me ask you this question.
I know that what your point is here, that you're saying that Jerry Jones would then say, well, where's my loan here? I want a little handout.
Yeah.
Well, okay, well, then give it to him. It's your $21 billion league.
But ask yourself this. Does the NFL need to? It's the most popular television product. It's the most popular sport. It's traveling worldwide. Their players are super successful. Mm-hmm. They've got them squashed down to where the pie is still shaped. What's the incentive to loan anymore? What's the incentive to give it to Miami?
You have got, okay, so if Miami, ask Miami's fan bases, ask the fan base in Cincinnati, which I know that they
still
don't
pay.
Care. Well, but here's the thing is that it could be bigger. You could grow it bigger because there's a bunch of fan bases that are sitting there going, yeah, we don't got a shot. We don't have a shot. In a league that is already full of parity, they can make it even, they can bring the pack even closer together, and you could truly have more opportunities to win if these teams have incentive to spend that money. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of the threat of super teams joining up, like a la the NBA, where if you start having a bigger piece of the NFL pie, not trying to win, then all of a sudden, then you have a problem. Just like the NBA. The NBA ran into a problem where it was like, you had so many teams that just didn't try to win anymore. So we'll see if any of that happens, but I'm with you. I don't think the other owners will ever sign off on it. But it'd be cool if they did, man. Have more teams than opportunity to win. All right, overreactions, underreactions. Week one in college football. 55305 is the Better You Today text line. Send us yours. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. All right, 55305, the Better You Today text line. All right, reactions, overreactions from week one in college foosball. Jalen Hurts is impressive. Better than we ever knew at Alabama. Heisman candidate. Well-deserved accolade for a hard-working, humble player. That text coming in. He was impressive. Transfer quarterbacks may be the story of week one. I mean, when you look at how many were really shining in week one of college football, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, Jacob Eason, mm-hmm. Up at UW. You had guys that kind of fell flat on their face, like Clemson transfers, the kid at Northwestern, and Kelly Bryant at Missouri.
Just week one.
Didn't play well. But transfer quarterbacks, they have major impacts. And mm-hmm. it's better to be a Georgia transfer than a Clemson transfer. I think we learned that. Mm-hmm. How about that?
That's the trick.
Yeah. Or SEC transfer, because Hurts was impressive.
Jalen Hurts was very humble after the game. He said, well, are we going to get better? He just wanted to pass it off all on his team. So, yeah, I agree. It was good.
Oregon State's offense looks great. Defense, not so much. How do you think Oregon State's offense does against the rest of the Pac-12? I don't
know. I'm not worried about Oregon State's offense inability to score. I always knew Jonathan Smith was going to bring a lot of not only quality football when it comes on the offensive side, but his ability to play call and diagnose it too. There is talent there a little bit.
Probably have the question of how do you think the defense is going to hold up against the Pac-12?
Yeah.
Because
you're not going to face as many as that kind of, I don't think you're going to have as much offensive talent as you did face versus Oklahoma State. Up and down.
Chuba Hubbard?
Yeah, you're not going to get that kind of speed as much. I mean, because that's what Oklahoma State does. They score all over the place.
They're going to have problems this week against Hawaii.
Yes, they will.
They're going to have problems against Washington State. They're going to have problems against Oregon. They're going to have problems against Washington. You're going to have problems against Stanford.
Well, defense is a problem if you can't stop anybody.
You're going to have problems against Utah. Khalil Tate could be an issue if they don't figure it out.
Against, here we are with that overreactions of week one. I know.
I mean, my goodness. But yeah, the overreaction to Oregon State is that this defense won't be able to improve this year. It's really disappointing that they were as bad as they had been last year and all of last year. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you just throw it all away and there's no hope in what happens this year. Because I thought you made a good point earlier in the show when you said they're in the right spot.
Yeah.
You just can't make the play.
Yeah, athletically, you're just not there yet. Speed-wise, technique-wise, you are in the right position. You know, you're trying to fit up on an outside fit on in contain. Your backer's running the right lanes. He's filling. He just isn't fast enough to quite get to that tackle and finish. So those are Jims and Joes. And so if I transition real quick, I wanted to bring up my, which I thought biggest overreaction for two programs, bigger overreaction from the quarterback situation at Washington State and the University of Washington. You have Anthony Gordon and Jacob Eason. Anthony Gordon put up 420 yards and 5 touchdowns. Jacob Eason, 379 yards, 4 touchdowns. You know, the talk is that both these guys are going to just immediately, they're going to just put up ungodly numbers.
Yeah.
So overreaction, you're looking at quarterback play in the state of Washington from two major universities, and you're going, you feel pretty good about yourself this week. You feel really good about how good your quarterbacks are.
Well, and then there's this one, too, from Dave. 55305, the Better You Today text line. He says, season's over, senior 2020, Ducks. Look, out of that game, we broke down for 3 hours yesterday. Go to 1080thefan.com, Les Schwab Tires podcast, if you want to hear the negative. I'm going to give you a little bit of positive because there was very few of it that we gave yesterday.
I'd say it was the narrative, not the negative.
Right. Well, but the narrative was the negative. Mm-hmm. But Penei Sewell is one of, if not the best left tackles in college football. You have him. The offensive line was great in that first half. Mace Funa on the defensive side of the football is going to be a dude and a half.
Plugger.
Your defense under Andy Avalos, they looked far better in prepared than they have in big games in the past. It's not a knock on Jim Levitt. It's not a knock on Nick Aliotti. It is just the way that Oregon's defense has performed in big games. They played a lot better in those big moment times where they hold the 2 field goals on change of possessions and short field. I thought they did a fantastic job. Your safety, Javon Holland, played out of his gourd, and he's all over the field, and Troy Dye continues to be Troy Dye with 15 tackles. The defense, outside of that final drive, man, they bowed their back time and time again.
Okay, and then I'll take the other stance on the defense. I agree with you. I think they looked faster. Mm-hmm. The secondary looked good. I thought Troy Dye had a couple mistakes mentally, maybe a little bit. Yeah, I was expecting a little bit better from there. But let's say this, and I feel pretty comfortable about this, is that passing attack from Auburn, that is a remedial passing attack. You are going to face much better, as you have seen. You faced Washington State. You're going to face other teams that can throw the ball so much better. You're going to get challenged very well in this conference. Yeah. But preparation wise, athletically, yeah, Oregon's defense looked better.
Look, there's no doubt that, I mean, I wasn't saying Bo Nix and that Auburn offense were these juggernauts through the air, but they looked far better Outside of that, the two wheel routes that Troy Dye got burnt on, and then the two offsides where Austin Faleau jumped offsides and Bo Nix just runs to the right and throws it up the sideline for a jump ball.
What's more interesting is the way Auburn teaches their offensive line to just sit still.
Sit there.
Just sit still.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, it worked.
Yeah, it works.
It worked because everybody at Oregon's like, what the hell's going on? Well, and Bo Nix just goes whoop and just rolls out and throws it up on the sideline for a jump ball. If it gets picked off, it doesn't matter.
Sure.
Because you just get 5 free yards. So, yeah. All right. Well, there we go. Not all hope is lost. Come on. Relax. It's depressing how much talent Oregon has, but the coaching is bad. That text on the Better You Today text line.
Could be some opinions. I saw a lot of that. I saw a lot of that in the we call that the echo chamber of Twitter.
Yes.
And the ones that you surround yourself that will tell you that there was some inexplicable coaching decisions that Coach Cristobal is going to have to address. I mean, it's going to be any media person is going to ask, what in the world happens at the beginning of the game when you call a timeout? Why are you wasting a timeout on a punt? And then why did you not have the wherewithal to understand on 4th and 1 that your quarterback wasn't eligible to play that game? And by the way, I tweeted out the picture, if you want to see it, 4th and 1 in inches, okay, at Cam Cleveland. If you want to see that, your running back's heels are at 9. You need inches. You're in pistol formation. I know you don't go under center. So everyone says, what if they go under center and quarterback sneak? Maybe you should. Maybe you might want to have that wrinkle in a 4th and short to be able to do that. But that was one of the worst play calls I've ever seen on a 4th down play. One of the worst.
Yeah.
You're not even on. Everybody on Auburn knew exactly where you were going. You had 2 timeouts to decide to make a play, and that was your call. It was terrible. Those are all questions that you're going to have to answer as a coach. And coaches know that. They understand it. They get it. That's why they're paid millions of dollars.
Well, that's a really good point in that I think Oregon has this idea that they want to impose their will. They just might not be there yet. And we went over this yesterday. There's a lot of factors that went into that meltdown, man. It was a laundry list from coaching decisions to offensive missteps and conservative play and guys just not making the play when they needed to make the play. To defensively in the most pivotal time, you give up 2 big plays to number 18, who is their go-to receiver, was last year. Williams is the guy that they go to when they need a first down, when they need a big play. Their jump ball receiver, they go to him, and he got loose twice in that final minute of the game. That is of concern there. And then special teams, you have a 29-yard punt. Your punter had been great all night. Gave Auburn great field position for that final drive.
So I put out this, I'll address one. Well, you know, we'll address it on the backside. I'll own something that I said on Twitter, and we'll hit that up in a break here.
All right, here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, 55305, the Better You Today text line. Over and under reactions from week 1 of college football. You teased it. Hit us with it.
Okay, so those of you that have listened to this show,
he's very upset today. The guy who texted this in.
So those of you that know that listen to the show, I was a massive proponent of how much this game meant, not only to the Pac-12, but just to Oregon fans or anybody that watched college football. I wanted this game to shut up SEC people and shut up everyone that had to constantly tell us that Justin Herbert couldn't make the play, and that is he the guy that's going to be that guy? Waiting for that moment and that shining play, and it was an incredible throw that he had in the touchdown. So at the end of the game, when we saw the one who made the play, that was Bo Nix, who made a couple plays. He made three significant plays that a true freshman, you go, that's impressive. First, the scramble to get that first down. That was an impressive play. Call it what you want, the throw. Okay, to get the first down on 4th down and then to make the throw across his body wasn't a great throw, but he actually gave his receiver a chance. Those plays were made by a freshman. So I said this on Twitter. I said, sorry, a true freshman should never outdo a veteran quarterback like that. And please start the excuses. Now go. Now here's the key word, outdo. I did not say outduel. Okay, because if you want to look at numbers-wise with Justin Herbert, number-wise, he did a lot. He put up some great numbers. And the excuses were that the wide receivers didn't give him enough, and there was dropped footballs and stuff. It's a team game. I thought at the end of the game that it was lost at the line of scrimmage more by the defense and the offensive line. I thought that the play calling got very conservative in the second half. It didn't allow Justin to be free. He didn't make plays with his feet at the end of the game. And yes, he got out, dude, by a freshman at the end of the game.
How?
By the one. I just explained it to you. Were you listening?
I know I am, but okay. I don't. Because Herbert threw it out of the back of the end zone. And,
No. What I said was in the moment of needing to make a play, in the moment of when your team needs you to make a play, that's what you ask from today's college football quarterbacks. You don't. This isn't the wing T anymore. This isn't the triple option. Jalen Hurts and these guys, Tua Tagovailoa made a play as a true freshman. That was one of the most amazing national championship winning plays. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence beat what arguably was one of the greatest college football. Those are the plays that you see made. In this game, Bo Nix needed a first down. He got it twice. Mm-hmm. He needed a touchdown. They could have kicked a field goal and won.
Yeah.
He made more plays at the end of the game, which means more. That is using your eyeballs. That's not a knock on Justin Herbert. That is that in the moment, he got outdone by a freshman.
Okay, but we
sensitivity
always,
aside, yeah. Numbers don't matter. Wins and losses when you need a playmate, they matter.
Yeah, and here's kind of the response that I've seen in those kind of comments about Herbert, and I don't necessarily agree with them all, but there is some validity to a few of them, is that, all right, well, you had Nix went to one guy in all three of those plays that you mentioned, right?
Yeah, number, scramble?
Number 18, right? And he was looking at him the whole time, okay? And pumping downfield to look for him and try to get the ball there. The people say, where's that guy? Now, on the counterpoint where I say I don't necessarily agree with that is that Herbert didn't give anybody a chance to catch the ball on the final play. I mean, nobody had a chance to catch that ball.
No.
And then you look at, did Gus Malzahn empower Bo Nix at the end of the game by saying, go make those plays? And whether it was Mario Cristobal or Marcus Arroyo, take that game out of Justin Herbert's hands.
I'm not here to condemn any coach or anything like that.
But aren't those things that we don't know? And we don't know if...
I don't have the call sheet in front of me. So I can just use... Again, that's just, I'm just using my eyeballs in the moment of, you know, we know here. Just in this state, you know when you see a guy that makes a play when you need to make a play. Mm-hmm. You've seen him. He's got a statue, for gosh sakes, and he's got his own place down in Eugene. So I'm not asking Justin Herbert to be a Heisman Trophy superstar. Nobody's asking. He is who he is, and he's a super talented kid who's got unbelievable gifts, and he's going to have a great successful career,
yeah,
both collegiately and professionally. But in the moment when you ask it the most, we all know when we see them. We've seen it. Did you see it? You saw it by Bo Nix. You didn't see it by Justin Herbert. That's it. That's as simple and as plain and black and white as I can put it down.
No, and that's what we were talking about this last week. The closest thing we've seen is that third down and 15 against Washington in overtime where he threw a frozen rope to Dylan Mitchell for a 17-yard gain to keep that drive alive.
It was a good play. It was a good play.
I mean, but that's the closest thing that we can have, and that was an overtime game in a big moment. And that is the closest thing that we have.
But that Washington win carries no weight compared to what this win would have done nationally against Auburn.
And my thing is, I wish that they would just let him be, because Mario Cristobal said it after the game. We were trying to be aggressive and keep scoring and play for the win. It did not seem like they were playing that way, though.
I tend to agree with you on that. It felt like there was a squeeze a little bit. When you're up 21-6, does your mindset change of what you're doing? And also, coaches need to be there. A lot of those, those guys, you think Gus Malzahn, how many games has Gus Malzahn been in like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't break it down. He's been there. In fact, he's been there before against Oregon. He's sat there. These coaches that are there at Oregon, they're new. Okay, Mario Cristobal has not been in that scenario over and over again versus a monster powerhouse situation. Okay, Marcus Arroyo certainly has not been there. If you don't think that coaching experience is also head and shoulders above when you're facing Gus Malzahn, you're nuts. You're nuts. Mm-hmm. That should carry some weight too. And that's why it goes from the staff all the way down to the players about that consistently being there. That game last night will be a great motivation, not only for the future of the Oregon Ducks, but you can take that experience and carry that over and over and over, not only for coaches, but for players.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that everything that you said has total validity on Justin Herbert, because, again, going back to the closest thing we've had has been that UW game, which is at home. I just think that it would be refreshing to see them let him fail. Because there's almost this ability that they don't let him unleash it and fail like that. You know
what
I mean?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I would put the ball in my best player's hands, and I would say, go win it for me. Either win it or lose it for me. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to do. I can be the type A coach that says, I don't want to be careful with this. Let's be more conservative. Let's get it in CJ's hands. Let's make it around. Man, I would get in that huddle, and I'd say, Justin, go win it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Go win it. Go do it. Go do what you got to do. You be you.
You know what was one of the coolest moments of that game? I mean, it probably wasn't cool for Oregon fans, but when, I've seen the clip over and over again, and I remember seeing it live when I looked up at the screen and I went, oh, that's awesome. Is Bo Nix fist pumping, and then Gus Malzahn looks him right in the eye and just goes, boom.
Yeah.
And gives him a little fist pump right back, like, boom.
Well, he knew something about it. I mean, they knew something about the young man. They knew something about that belief in it. And maybe that belief in him as a freshman who's 18 years old empowered it, or there was a connection with it. But whatever it is, we saw it happen.
Yeah.
And that those types of things just aren't just, you just don't get that from freshmen.
Yeah.
True freshmen.
Do you remember the term Clemsoning it?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? When Dabo Swinney's team would pucker and he went, you know, this may sound familiar. His first year, he went 9-5 at Clemson, lost their bowl game. Second year, or he went 9-5 and won a bowl game. Second year, they went 6-7, and then they started tearing off 10-win seasons.
You have to go through that fight. You have to know what it's like to be in there.
And they were known for losing the big game.
Yep.
Losing the important game.
Unfortunately, we as a conference right now, in this entire conference, teams are more and more are in these situations, and you're just waiting for that hump game from somebody in this conference. We've been waiting to see it. 10 straight losses by this conference to SEC-ranked teams. We are all, I don't care whose fan base you are, waiting for that hump game for this conference.
55305, the better you today, text time. Put a bow on the show with the bold prediction next on The Fan. All right, 55305, the better you today, text time. Got a lot of feedback today on reactions over reactions. Guess what tomorrow is already, though?
Wednesday. The day before the NFL starts.
Ooh, so today is?
The day before.
What?
Kind of say that a lot nowadays. We had football on Monday, Sunday, Saturday, Friday. It was a big weekend. Now it's NFL weekend. Mm. It's here.
Here's a good overreaction, too, from week one, the last one that came in. Bo Nix being like the savior. He went 17 of 31 for 177 yards, 2 touchdowns and 2 interceptions.
Tim Tebow said Bo Nix was a gift from God for Gus Malzahn.
God made Bo Nix for
Gus Malzahn. I will say you've seen a lot of freshmen play in this world, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Not seen a lot of true freshmen ever do something like that on a big stage.
Go 17 of 31 for 177 yards?
No, win a game on a big stage like that.
Yeah,
win stats, a game. Stats, schmats. The kid couldn't even figure it out in the first half. He looked
like
he had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
Zero. But why are we so wrapped up in stats?
Well, the throw, it was also
Tim Tebow was a terrible thrower, but you know what he was? A winner.
The throw before the touchdown was a horrific throw, too.
Collegiately. Though. He actually won a playoff game with Denver Broncos, too. I mean, so
yes,
give Tim Tebow some credit.
Hey,
you could be a really, really great college football player. Danny Werfel. Johnny Manziel.
No doubt about it.
They find ways to win.
Oh, I think Bo Nix is going to be really good in college. Like, he's going to be a Heisman Trophy. His first game, like, you were just sitting there like, what? He did not look comfortable. I give him a ton of credit. He kept a ton of plays alive with his legs and made something out of nothing. All right. It is week two now in college football. And we, you know, our big matchups this week, we actually got some really good games in college football this week. You've got not just the Pac-12 matchups where
big games.
You've got Stanford, USC, and Washington and Cal with a couple conference games. There's actual games that matter. what?
I love that. Actual games that matter.
Like number six LSU visiting number 10 Texas. Mm. That's a big one.
Well, you're not excited for Alabama, New Mexico State?
Thrilled for it, especially after what the Cougs did to them last week.
100.
How much do you think they get paid for that?
Well, I think I don't know.
And then number one Clemson is hosting number 12 Texas A&M.
Tickle me interested.
Well, you're going to be even more interested when you hear the thing that left guard Jared Hawker of Texas A&M said that might have Jimbo Fisher wanting to kill him.
I like being the underdog, you know. You always have something to prove, so I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Does that make them ripe for an upset?
Oh, yes, it does. There will be an upset.
Oh, he's calling it. Poster board material.
He goes, oh, yes, it is. There will be an upset.
He likes being an underdog. What else are you going to say? Wait, no, we don't want to win?
I got a question, though. He says he doesn't like being the underdog, so does that mean in his mind he is the favorite, which means the upset will be Clemson beating Texas A&M? Hmm. Boom. Wrap your head around that.
Wrap your head around that. And what if Texas A&M beats Clemson?
Texas A&M is 17.5 point underdogs, according to Vegas. But may I remind you, Georgia State was 25 point underdogs to Tennessee, and they won. So take that.
I'm pretty interested in that game. I think everybody is.
That'll be a fun one. It'll be a measuring stick for Jimbo Fisher and where his program is at. If Texas A&M does win, SEC hype train out of control.
Oh.
I mean, it may derail. It's going so fast. Yeah. Because then you would be talking about Alabama, LSU, A&M, and Georgia all winning national championships.
Yeah. They all get in. All four teams are SEC teams in the Final Four.
Bingo.
So, the SEC Sorry, everybody championship. Else. If Thanks
Clemson,
for coming.
If Clemson loses, can they work their way back? This will be the only ranked opponent they face all year long.
You feel comfortable about that? Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait, they have Syracuse. They have Syracuse. After Syracuse, it's the only ranked opponent they'll have.
What about North Carolina? They had a big win. I mean, Mac Brown was dancing.
No.
Watch.
You think they're going to be ranked?
I don't know. It's because it's Mac Brown.
Because they beat an unranked South Carolina team when they took a knee with 47 or with 11 seconds to go on their own 47.
Don't ever discredit a W because down. It still looks the same in the win-loss column as a W.
Yeah, I know.
Mac Brown was dancing. It's great.
Yeah. They may find themselves playing another ranked team.
Trickle in.
But it's a bad conference. It's a bad conference the ACC is. Do you think they can work their way back in?
It is the defending national champion. So, yes, I do believe. Just by the sake of being the defending national champions, yes.
But transitive property eventually will catch up with A&M. If A&M beat Clemson, then LSU beats A&M. But A&M beats Georgia, which loses to Florida. I hate the way we bend ourselves into a pretzel. Clemson is one of the best teams in college football. They should be in that conversation the rest of the year.
Sneaky good game from week two. Cincinnati at Ohio State.
Mm.
Playing the Buckeyes.
Okay.
I'm not going to say the. I'm not going to give it to you.
Don't do that. Uh-uh. You know, I got another one too. Nebraska at Colorado.
That's the rivalry we've all been waiting for. It used to be a monster.
That could be a sneaky good game this time around.
Yeah. Nebraska only 4-point favorites.
Mm-hmm. It should be because Colorado is a little better than you think.
Yeah. Nebraska opened as 7-point favorites. That line now down to 3.
Hell.
Mm.
Money coming in on the Buffs.
Taking that line.
Bet Nebraska then, you know. That thing keeps going down further and further and further. Yeah, I'm pumped for this week in college football. Oregon has Nevada. Oregon State has Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a tough game. On the road for the Beavs. In Hawaii. All right, tomorrow we'll be back. We'll have Nugs. And
Wednesday already?
It's Wednesday already.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happens fast.
Doesn't it?
It happens so fast. Whew. Excited for this weekend. High school football starting this weekend.
Portland State home opener.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who do you guys have?
Yelm. Who do you guys have?
Gladstone.
Gladstone. Is that a right? You said that with a, like, are you glad to play them?
Could be number one versus number two.
Ooh, baby. Out of the gate?
Yeah. It, you know.
Things happen early.
I went to Gladstone my freshman year of high school.
Yeah, you kind of, you're a chip jumper.
Yeah,
you went to Montana, then you jumped.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, my dad coached at Gladstone.
Yeah.
So
why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Played for my dad.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
And then I moved. So that's why I did that.
Mm-hmm. Big games.
Big games. Big funds. And that's why I'm all for open transferring college football. All right. Up next, the herd of the Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3's during break, 3 to 7, primetime with Isaac and Sook. Have a great Tuesday. We'll see you Wednesday right here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.